Pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times. Somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Welcome to On the Wing Podcast, fueled by Purina Pro Plan. Coming at you live, well, live at the moment on Rooster Road Trip, episode 3. We are in the parking lot of Kelly Slough Wildlife Refuge. Did I get that right, Seth?
That was right.
Kelly Slough Wildlife Refuge. It's a little bit windy, so you might hear a little wind, but it's a just drop dead gorgeous day. It's probably temps in the low 50s. Light breeze. It's just sun is shining now after a gray star. I can even see the moon over Seth's shoulder. So we are episode 3 of Rooster Road Trip, coming at you from the greater Grand Forks, North Dakota area. Riding shotgun with us on Rooster Road Trip, thanks to our road trip partners, and they include Browning Firearms, Federal Ammunition, Orvis Hunting Apparel and Dog Products, Rufflin Kennels, Garmin. Now you hear an airplane. We might get some airplanes where we're at. Garmin, Irish Setter Boots, Sound Gear Hearing Protection, and Yeti Coolers. Got the Rooster Road Trip quarterback. I always call you a quarterback on these episodes. What quarterback are you going to compare yourself to this year?
You've asked me that question several times, too. I guess this year I'm Sam Darnold, which is fine.
Stick it with the Vikes.
No, I'll just stick with the Vikes.
Andrew Vavra, Vice President of Marketing. We got Aaron Blackschmidt back. This is the second episode in last month or so, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like all-time high for me.
And you are, tell me your current job title, video production coordinator. Yeah. And the Rooster Road Trip grand video production master. How do you like that?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Can
yeah.
we use well, that in your annual review?
Sure, let's do it.
And Seth Owens, what's your title, Seth?
I am the education outreach coordinator for North Dakota Pheasants Forever.
Well, you're kind of the featured guest on this particular episode. We'll go back in time a little bit and recap as we closed out episode 2. We talked about going into the golden hour.
We had some high hopes.
We did. We had a good day on day 2.
No, it was a great day.
But we did have some high hopes going into the golden hour. What do you recall of the goal? It feels like it's a week ago, not a couple of days.
Every day
ago.
Is Groundhog's Day during this trip. And at the beginning, you're like, oh, man, this is going to be a long week. But at the same time, you blink and it's over. Mm-hmm. And now that we're over the hump, it's like, holy cow, it's already almost coming to an end. But for that end of that day specifically, it was still so hot. Mm-hmm. It was so hot. And the Plots property that we ended up going to finish out the day, and people might be wondering, you went to one more spot like right after lunch? That was your day? Well, it was over 900 acres.
I think we had two final spots.
Remember? Well, it was still the same property. Like drove to a different part of that property. It was ginormous, but it had really good habitat. It was broken up. At least the first walk was. By some water features, some hills. We're able to push a few birds through a beautiful sea of grass. I have no idea what that grass was. I'm not a biologist, but it was about thigh high. But it was easy to walk through, too. Like, it didn't make sense. It's almost like soft, like when you walk through it. So I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. We had a couple shots. One bird got off my boot when I wasn't expecting it, standing at the end of a fence line. And did the very smart maneuver of flying right at Jesse Kohler, mm-hmm. who was still with us then. And then by the time it split off and presented a safe shot for both of us, he was screaming.
Yeah.
Jesse pulled down some tail feathers, but that's about all we saw.
Do you remember the factoid about how fast a rooster pheasant can fly at max speed?
I've seen 35. I've seen 60. I don't know what's real.
I've seen 60.
This day of fake news. I just don't know.
That one was at 57 degrees, or 57 miles per hour.
Is that the top speed?
No, 60. I believe 60. But that one was just under.
Yeah, that was.
It was screaming.
It was moving. So from there, we were circling back to the trucks, and I believe one got up in front of you, or is it Jesse again?
Jesse.
Yeah, Jesse made a good shot on it, too.
Yeah. And on camera, it looked like it was dead.
It did, yeah. And the conditions, you know, were just super hot, and the dogs had kind of an issue there.
It was hot, dry. I assumed that bird was going to end up in, you know, a vest, but after wheeling around for quite a long time, then there's only so much, hunt dead, hunt, yeah. find him, come on, then before
I had
you realize.
Both of my dogs out at that point, and Logan had track, and there was Emily had a dog. I mean, we have four dogs in there, and we just could not find that bird. It had been 81 degrees. My dogs were coming back to me over and over and over for water.
Yep. I was definitely serving a purpose because I don't have a dog, but I can carry water.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was contributing to the group by anybody's dogs need water because they all did.
Well, there's probably going to be video footage of that one because, Aaron, you looked at me after that and was like,
yeah, that was one of the prettiest clips I think I've ever got of a wing shot, you know, and the blue sky, that golden grass that Andrew was describing, it looked kind of like the Ukrainian flag, you know, a little bit. A single nice cottonwood tree out on the left side, and then Jesse just swinging up and just clean one shot. Might have been two shots, I can't remember now, but just I remember seeing that. It was just so visually clean and crisp, and I was like, oh, yeah, you're going to see that one in probably several Pheasant Forever videos down the line.
Calendar cover coming at you.
Yeah.
The moment that everybody dreams of.
Yep.
Right there. So after not being able to find that bird, we eventually made it back to the trucks and then wheeled around, I'll call it a block for lack of a better term, but went to the other side of it because it was actually split by a road around the western edge. And our group separated, which I hate doing, but, you know, as the sun begins to set and you kind of get that bird lust, if you will, it's like, well, we'll have a better chance if we split up and deploy a couple different tactics. So Nate and I actually hopped out at a tree row because as we were driving over there, birds were piling into this private field and they're all going straight to these other like hedgerows, tree rows. But that was electronically posted and untouchable. So we figured, well, this tree row is on plots. It is huntable. Mm-hmm. Like let's give that a go. So Nate and I took on that mission while everyone else went further up and they were going to ride a drainage that kind of split north and south up one of the arms of this plots property. I can speak for what we saw. We only kicked up one pheasant towards the end. Of course, it caught us with our pants down a little bit because we made it all the way through the tree row, went down a hill, and then we're trying to decide which direction now. And as we're kind of just looking at each other and talking, one got up slightly wild that we were probably pushing the whole time and maybe got nervous because we stopped walking, but just far enough away where neither of us even kind of raised up our shotguns. And that was our walk other than seeing yet another beautiful western North Dakota sunset.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Like once that temp started dipping a little bit, it's like, okay, yep, we're back in that magical moment.
So the other group fractured even further, which delights you to no end.
Yeah, we'll get to that, but yeah.
So I'd sat out for until the final maybe half hour, let my dogs cool off because searching for that bird, they were really warm. And I just gave them a rest. Jesse and Emily switched dogs and walked that drainage. So I can't speak to what they saw along the way.
Well, Aaron can.
Oh, yeah, you were with them, weren't
you? Yeah, so I followed Emily and Jesse down into that in that creek bottom. And, you know, we've been kind of finding the birds by water, you know, pretty predominantly so far. And I was like, oh, this is it. It's golden hour. It's that gorgeous, you know, sunset kicking off. And, yeah, it was super pretty, but kind of same thing, just tough sledding. And I think we busted up one bird, you know, fairly soon into the walk, but went right into the sun. Emily's shouting over, I can't tell what it is. And, Jesse's like, I think it's a hen, you know. So neither of them took a shot or anything like that. But that was the only bird, only pheasant we saw. We ended up pushing some teal further down the creek and eventually got near, you know, we're looking at our watches. You know, the sun had dipped, but everyone's like, okay, when's sunset? You know, got that right on time. And Emily managed to grab a teal there near the very end. And that kind of closed out that walk. And then we had a pretty nice little hustle back up to the trucks across that big open spans. But yeah, it was super pretty down in there, you know, and I always love it when the light gets really good. And, you know, I'm just shooting probably way more than I should, but it's definitely worth it. I did have one instance where I'd been separated. I was on Jesse's side of the creek and I wanted to get over to Emily's side just to switch up the angles and stuff. And I'm looking for a spot to cross. And I finally see one. I'm like, okay, I think I can make it there. So I do the leap of faith, you know, with my camera up and everything, and jump right into a thorn bush. Don't stick the landing. End up down in the creek, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I'm stuck, you know. And Jesse comes over, and I give him my camera, and I'm pulling thorns out of me the rest of the walk. But good times, you know.
Well, for clarity for folks wondering, Emily Spolier is a North Dakota resident. She's a North Dakota state coordinator. Has a North Dakota waterfall stamp, so she was able to bag that teal. And I had the final 20-minute, 30-minute walk with my pups, and all we saw were hens. So that closed out our golden hour. It was fun. It was beautiful, but it wasn't incredibly productive. So we, before we roll into the start of day three, which we said goodbye to Jesse Kohler, the upland game biologist, for North Dakota at the end of day two. And Jesse, if you're listening, we sincerely appreciate your help. It was great hunting with you, and great job that you're doing for the state of North Dakota. Let me give a shout out to Purina Pro Plan, the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and the presenting sponsor of On the Wing Podcasts. My pups, Esky, Gitchy, and Winter, I'll eat Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat conservation mission of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, which is extremely important to me and it should be to you as well, but because Purina Pro Plan also has a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. In fact, Purina Pro Plan was created to fuel hardworking dogs like yours and like mine. For increased endurance, joint support, muscle tone, it all starts with Purina Pro Plan Sport. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com. All right, day three. We said goodbye to Jesse, and we're joined by another North Dakota Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. No, not parks, just Game and Fish in North Dakota. Every state's got a little different name. Another employee, Kayla Bendel, who also happens to be a former Pheasants Forever employee. So, Andrew, tell us a little bit about the scheme for day three.
Yep. So, Kayla is the R3 coordinator for North Dakota Game and Fish, and she's really good at helping people who shouldn't be finding birds find birds. It's almost like what she does professionally. So she was the perfect person to try and help us find birds. No, I'll get it aside. We hatched a plan to go further north than we had been because we were only going to hunt about a half a day that day due to the fact we had to travel clear across the state to where we are today. So we went north to a plot property that was a little over 300 acres. And when we got there, it was raining. Like it was a real rain. It was went from a little sprinkles, intermittent rain to a soaking rain. Like it was
one of those definitive autumn arrived cold front change in the climate sort of.
Yeah. I went from nearly 80 degrees the day before to, you know, suddenly there was like a high of in the 40s.
Yeah,
that was a huge swing. So I'm sure all the duck hunters out there were pumped and keeping themselves busy. We were waiting for the sun to rise, just listening to the rain pelt the trucks, just wondering like, well, at some point I'm hoping this can pass so that our camera guys don't hate us too much, as I'm texting them like, so how much does this need to kind of let off before our lenses and equipment aren't that risk anymore? But as it was started to lighten up, we had a different curveball thrown at us. And that was a very large, very friendly German Shepherd, which we assume was a local, you know, just farm dog out taking a stroll.
There wasn't any farm super close.
But that's the thing. So I hopped out and, you know, I looked at the map. It's like, okay, there looks like there's some structures down the road a little bit. I wonder if there's like a homestead tucked in back there. So I did my best to kind of herd him away from our pack so we didn't have to worry about any confrontations with, you know, another male strange dog. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows how that can go. And you don't want to put yourself nor your dogs in those situations. Walked him down the road, got him to that homestead. There was no home, just a bunch of outbuildings, and that was it. So he promptly led me back to the group. And we actually eventually just kind of staked him out for the duration of our hunt up in the safe spot by our cars, but still visible from the road. So if anyone came looking for him, they'd find him, but he also wouldn't put himself nor our dogs at risk of a confrontation. So... once we got all that behind us and the sun came up and the rain stopped, you look down this hill and it was like, you know, if I had a huge bank account and a lot of time, this is what I would do. Mm. It was the perfect mixture for finding pheasants. It had smaller food plots interspersed randomly throughout it that were actually huntable. Like the birds wouldn't just pile out the end. It had multiple sloughs. It had different edges of grass to cattails to bushes, like interspersed throughout it. It was the type of place where if it was just you and your dog, you could hunt that all day because the birds would never want to leave. Mm-hmm. You could just kind of circle around it, try it from different angles, play the wind differently. Like, it's like the ultimate playground for a pheasant hunter, and that landowner is generous enough to let anybody come experience that. So I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it was a phenomenal piece.
Yeah, when I stood on the crest of that hill, you could count 7 different shades of brown, 3 different shades of yellow, and 2 different shades of green. Which people are like, what the hell is he talking about? But, it, you know, that in the fall when you can look and it's not a monoculture of just one shade of color, you know, you start seeing all those differences. You know, there's a variety of different plants. There's food. There's different cover there. It was very alluring, as somebody would say, coming over the top of the road looking at Onyx. That one was definitely birdie feeling. And as we entered in, it was birdie in reality.
Yeah, it kept us busy for a large portion of that morning. It didn't take too long before we had a rooster in the bag. And then our group kind of split up a little bit. I stuck towards the western side of one of the sloughs basically broke us apart. Mm-hmm. And I stayed with Kayla and Emily and went on a hunt with them, if you will. And it was after we split up. Now, they found another rooster, and they both tag-teamed it at the exact same time. That was super fun to watch. Just got out of the edge of a food plot, and no doubt about it, bird back in hand, and it was just really cool to watch that. And then as you guys swung, I think, further east and north, we kind of continued our trajectory, like, a little northwest. Mm-hmm. We kicked up, I think, 3 more birds throughout that walk. You know, took a shot at another one, weren't able to get it. But we just kept moving birds, even though we didn't have like prime opportunities. And sometimes that's okay too.
Yeah, I was with Nate to your right, and we came over a hill. And I had Esky out, and Nate had Maisie, and our dogs were locked up on point going down a hill. And one by one, roosters got up. It was a bachelor group, I think, of 4 roosters, most of them out of range. One of them in range, Nate put that one in the bag. And it was on from there. I mean, we had pretty much constant action, just not a lot of quality shots. We had another point downhill where we had a point in honor. 2 roosters got up, and I never was able to take a shot because all I had in my field of vision were my dog's heads. You know, the dog's heads were just, the birds just never got up very high. And So we passed on that. And then I had an opportunity in WIFT. So it happens. But the, you know, everywhere we went in that piece of property, it was beautiful. And there were birds. Even at the very end at the truck. You guys had seen a bird pitch in.
No, we left one for you. We were like, no, that's to be Bob's bird, but we'll leave that one specially for him. He deserves it. And so we're like, you know, if you just keep walking a little above, you know, those pines right there, that we have a present for you.
Yeah. And that goes back to what you were saying about those birds not wanting to leave. Because we watched that bird from the other side of the slough circle all the way around the tip of the slough and then fly back counterclockwise towards us and then land up.
Pitch down right back on the property.
Yeah, it didn't leave. Mm-hmm.
So Eski caught the track. And so is it where you thought it was going to be?
Or pretty dang close. Yeah, like it was definitely that bird.
Okay. Yeah, for sure.
So Eski went on point, and then I released her, went on point, released her, and I went into the road ditch, and she went on point again. And I thought that bird was down in the ditch, and it got up, I guess, back into my right on the peel side, back in towards the property. I had a moment shot. I took the shot, I hit it, but did not come down, and I did not recover that bird. So another one, missed opportunity. But, yeah, it was a very, very birdie spot.
I'm hoping that's not going to be, like, the title for the overall, you know, road trip this year, like missed opportunities. I feel like we've had a lot of, like, opportunities that keep on flying away this year, but we still have time to redeem ourselves.
Do you feel like we're missing more than normal?
Yeah, I do.
Do you really?
Yep, 100%. This is a very strong group in terms of marksmanship, and like when we get opportunities, generally we capitalize. This year, I don't know if I'm just paying closer attention to the whole group because I just don't have a dog down in front of me, but it seems like we've been leaving more on the table than usual.
I definitely should have gotten two birds on that field yesterday morning. I haven't taken a crack yet today. Like today the birds have, well, we'll get to today, but they seem like they're flush and wilder. But second field we hunted yesterday.
Yeah, so from that lovely property, thank you whoever you are, landowner, for letting us walk it. We went to another plot's property further north, a slightly larger one at over 700 acres. But in a first for the road trip, before we even hunted that plot's property, we hunted a piece of private ground, which seems sacrilegious for the road trip, but it wasn't posted. It wasn't posted physically, and it wasn't posted electronically. And in the great state of North Dakota, that means it's open to public hunting.
Yeah, that is a pretty unique distinction, isn't it?
As an out-of-stater, it feels weird. Mm-hmm. Like we had Emily actually drive to all like the visible corners to like double check, like it is not like posted anywhere. You know, we looked online, like we made dang sure that we were good to go, because it's a really weird concept to me. And I was actually talking to Kayla about that, because she's from Minnesota, and she's like, yeah, it took a while, but now I don't even think twice about it, and some of my best spots are like that. So I'm sure as we maybe in the future find more opportunities like that, I'll get more used to it. But it still has this twinge of like,
for sure,
am I doing something wrong? Am I going to get yelled at? It's goofy. But anyways, it was too good to not walk is basically what I'm saying. So as we were rolling up to the plots, we stopped a little short, and Emily rolls down her window. She's like, this grass right here, this looks delicious. I was like, I'm seeing it. Like, a wide variety of grass types. It had that dirty kind of
weedy mess
to it. It looked like it'd be thick with birds. So we parked, hustled over there. And when we first started walking, Jordan Darley, the other video production specialist along for the ride this year, he saw like a string of, I think, four or five like birds just running in a line like away from us. He's like, dude. It's like, well, there's not a whole lot we can do about that, but
he is from Hawaii.
That's why Jordan
was he giving you the hang loose at the same time.
He's sitting 30 yards away from us smiling right now, so I think I did
dude. He just gave us a look. There's the hang loose.
So that was a good sign, and we started walking, and I think a couple birds got out wild, but eventually the oddest thing happened. Between Logan and I, a big rooster popped up about 3 or 4 feet, but then immediately went back down, which immediately makes me think, cripple, right? All right, let's get the dogs over. Let's find this bird. We can add that to our bag for sure. But it disappeared on us. So eventually Finn, who's Kayla's poodle pointer, who is a lovely dog.
Tall.
Very tall.
Tall like a moose.
Yeah, that dog is birdie. Like, I loved watching Finn work. Finn and Trek, Logan's yellow lab, actually kind of reversed course and backtracked where we came from, and they were on scent the whole time. And maybe about 70 yards later, in front of Emily and Kayla, a perfectly fine big rooster erupted. So there's a debate amongst the group right now is, was that bird or is that a new bird? Because the gals thought, like, based on how they tracked it specifically from that spot to where it got up, that it was the bird that Logan and I saw. And I think Logan's in the camp of, I don't know, if birds are getting so smart that they're hopping up 3 feet, seeing like hunters be like, oh, nope. And then like hopping back down and then running, we're all doomed. Like that'll be the end.
So his theory is that it's got a broken wing.
It's got a broken wing.
And it couldn't fly.
Yep. And we saw a different bird. So we pushed a few out of there, and then we turned into the plots. You know, you saw a couple of roosters pitch down just to the north.
Those were the same ones that were in the weedy field.
So those were the ones that escaped out the back?
Yeah, okay. Yep. That's where I was thinking we could find them again, but they disappeared.
It's amazing how they do that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know where they are. You have 4 or 5 dogs on the ground, yep, and you still can't find them.
Well, because I was on top of that hill, and I saw there's like one green weedy patch, and they both went in there, and they were gone when we went in there.
Makes you think about how many birds you're just walking over every single day.
Yeah, or that they just hit the ground and just bolted. Well, which is what I would have done.
Oh yeah, for sure. But like, we were still hot on their tail. Like, you'd think we eventually would have
20 minutes though.
Would have picked up that scent and found them. Like, that's a heck of a hint in terms of like where to go look for a bird.
Sure. Yeah, and there were 2 of them. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them stuck around.
Exactly. So from there we only kicked up 1 more hen in the middle of some cattails because, yes, we had to plow through some cattails again. And then it turned into more of like a Sharpie hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So the south end of this plots property had multiple large bodies of water within it and a good deal of topography, just covered in probably shin-high grass. So we ended up, I think, by the end of the day, seeing maybe only 6 or 7 Sharpies, but we did get one in the bag. Nate connected, so that was actually our first Sharpie of the trip, which was surprising. Mm-hmm. I thought we would have been into them pretty thick just naturally in terms of where we have been spending time and we have been seeing them, but
yep,
that was the first Sharpie of the trip, so that was fantastic because I think for some of us that's one of our favorite birds.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen a single hun yet.
We have. So that was first half of the Jesse trip.
Oh, they did see you. I have not seen you.
Yep, so we pushed a broken up covey, which led us to believe somebody had already hunted that field.
Mm, yeah.
Because we pushed up a single and then another 2 in kind of like a fallow area of a field.
Mm.
But anyway, yeah, we pushed around that, and then it was basically 2 o'clock, and we had to hit the road, and Kayla had to hit the road, and we burned rubber to where we are today.
Grand Forks, North Dakota, the greater Grand Forks area. That took us, I don't know, 3.5-hour drive to get here. Seeing a lot of airplanes as you come in here.
Hearing a lot of airplanes, hearing a lot of helicopters. We're not putting a drone up anytime soon, I'll tell you that. But it's the land of Seth.
The land of Seth. So, Seth, we're going to have you introduce yourself right after I give a shout-out to OnX Hunt, our national sponsor, OnX Hunt. And you can use the code PFQF at the link in our show notes, and you will get 20% off your subscription to Onyx. And Onyx, like they always do, will make a contribution back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. Thank you to Onyx for supporting the organization, for supporting conservation, this podcast, and access for public hunters. Seth, you've been incredibly patient as we've been talking about all the days that have occurred before you. Before we dive into kind of the game plan for what was this morning, tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, and you know, a little bit about, lead us to what you do for the organization.
Yeah, so I'm a lifelong North Dakota resident, mostly in the Red River Valley. Grew up in Hillsboro, North Dakota, which is definitely not the mecca of upland or waterfowl hunting.
Well, give us an area of the state where Hillsboro is.
So Hillsboro is right along, basically right along the Red River on the border. Dead
border
center.
Minnesota.
Yep, Minnesota-North Dakota border. Dead center between Grand Forks and Fargo.
Hmm.
One of those little towns that if you're driving on the interstate north and south, you drive right by it. We have a Subway and a Burger King, and that's probably about, you know, 90% of the traffic that comes into town. But yeah, so I've lived in the valley for, you know, almost my entire life. Went to school at University of North Dakota for a fisheries and wildlife biology degree and a minor in English. For some reason, I decided to get that.
It's okay.
Yeah, I like to write, sort of.
Cool people have English degrees in the mix.
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you have one too, Aaron? Right on. Oh, Andrew?
No.
3 out of 4, I think you're the oddball.
No, it is. No, it's cool kid.
True, I am the oddball.
So, yeah, have spent the last couple years in Grand Forks, you know, since coming to school here in 2019. Started up with Pheasants Forever in 2022, and, I mean, I love it. It's been fantastic. It's the first, you know, I say it's the first big boy job. I had a short-term gig, a summer gig with the Corps of Engineers after graduating, and then I came into this, and it's like, holy cow, I'm like a real adult now, sort of. So, yeah.
Keep telling yourself that, right?
I'm going to try to. But, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You know, Grand Forks, for the most part, has been pretty good for me. It's not the mecca of upland hunting, but there's some sweet spots here and there. But I do a ton of wildlife photography, and I, you know, being in the valley, we're in this kind of cool area of tall grass prairie, some of the remnant tall grass prairie in the whole world, especially in the whole state. And it's a unique spot. So I'm grateful to be here and not, you know, not in Fargo, at least. So
we had opportunity to go to Fargo. We chose here. So I feel like we chose correctly based by that.
That was kind of funny, though. Grand Forks throwing shade at Fargo. Is that a normal thing?
Well, maybe it's just a me thing. You know, growing up dead center in the middle of this, in the middle of Grand Forks and Fargo, for most people, it was either I was going to go be a bison at NDSU or I was going to come and be a Sioux at UND. My sister is at NDSU, and she's doing just fine. I have nothing against the bison, but, man, do I hate Fargo.
It seems to be a very beautiful town.
Something like that, maybe.
All right, so you mentioned a few things that I want to learn a little bit more about. Let's start with your job. Andrew mentioned, you know, we hunted with Kayla Bendel yesterday, the state of North Dakota's R3 leader. You're the R3 leader for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever in the state of North Dakota. For folks that maybe are wondering, what the heck's R3 mean? Break that down for us.
So R3 is not reduce, reuse, recycle, as much as that is another good, you know, three R's. R3 is recruitment, retention, and reactivation of hunters on the landscape. So much of our money for conservation comes from hunter dollars, whether that's through, you know, Pittman-Robertson tax funds or license sales or things like that. Conservation, you know, isn't really possible in a lot of places without, you know, the drive from hunter dollars. So by having more hunters out on the landscape, not only are we preserving this hunting heritage that's been a part of North America forever, but we're also, you know, increasing funding and keeping our funding available to preserve these wild places and the wildlife, you know, through perpetuity.
So that's the philosophy. How's it, what's the practicality? What do you do on a day-to-day basis to R3 people into conservation and hunting?
So education is a big thing. Talking, you know, more about how hunting isn't just, you know, walk out and shoot, go home. There's a whole different side of things to it, you know, for being a hunter and a conservationist. And if once you can start kind of piecing those pieces together of how, you know, hunters are out on the landscape all the time, they're the ones that are going to see changes. They're going to be kind of the whistleblowers. If they're like, hey, you know, I used to hunt this place forever, and I'm seeing a huge decline or a huge abundance compared to in years past. I wonder what's going on. So, you know, now they can prompt research. They can prompt, you know, things that they see and prompt discussion. So having that as like hunters as the whistleblower, hunters as, you know, a big part of the funding, and hunters as, you know, the users and the, I shouldn't say users, the stewards of the landscape, you know, keeping these places available, keeping public lands public and open to everybody. Hunting season is just, you know, a short blip in the fall, but we're sitting out here on a National Wildlife Refuge, which is directly funded, you know, through duck stamp sales, which is often funded by hunters. We're sitting next to a WMA, which is North Dakota Wildlife Management Area, that is funded by hunter dollars, and all these areas here are open to everybody. So hunters fuel a lot more than just themselves.
So as a person, you know, listening is maybe in the city, they're thinking, well, North Dakota, what do they need an R3 person in North Dakota? Everybody grows up with a shotgun in their hands, right? I mean, everybody grows up duck hunting and pheasant hunting. Is that the case in North Dakota, or are things changing even here?
Things are, you know, we're stable in North Dakota. We're lucky to have, you know, programs and, you know, Pheasants Forever chapters, Ducks Unlimited chapters, other people out there on the landscape, even just like volunteers are being mentors to foster that next generation. But that might not always be the case. In our more urbanized states, and, you know, especially when you get out east or on the West Coast, a lot of those states are starting to see pretty drastic decline in hunter numbers. And kind of to stay on top of that and not ever have it come to that in North Dakota, you know, this is why we do what we do. We want to continue to encourage not only, you know, my direct work with hunters or with new hunters, but also to kind of provide the resources and provide the opportunities to help other people fill these mentorship roles. Because I'm one person, I get to work with our chapters and it's fantastic, but I can't, you know, cover every single person. But if I can provide the resources or the assistance to, you know, current hunters to promote and, keep this hunting lifestyle, whether it's in their family or they're sharing it with their friends, that's kind of that snowball effect that we're hoping to keep going in North Dakota.
So one of the things that isn't part of your job description, but I'd argue is, just as inspiring to hunters is sort of your hobby, your phenomenal talent, but your passion for wildlife photography. So have you always carried a camera with a shotgun?
Not always. I started, you know, I picked up my first cheap little camera off Facebook Marketplace in 2021.
Really? So you've only been shooting for like 3 years?
Yeah, I'm still pretty fresh into it. Maybe
so for folks that have maybe seen video like Prairie Grouse Primer, our forecast for prairie grouse hunting with video, lots of sage grouse, prairie chickens, sharptail imagery that we've used over the past couple of years. That's been your photography and video, hasn't it?
Yeah, not all of it, but some of it has been. I love it. Running the camera is, you know, newer to me, but I find myself, especially when it comes to photographing grouse, I spend more time in the spring with the camera than I do out in the fall with the shotgun. You know, I love hunting grouse and I love doing all that, but there's so much more to the story that I'm lucky to share in North Dakota because it's such a target-rich environment. I mean, we have an abundance of sharptail. We have abundance of, you know, wildlife resources. So it's like, yes, I've only been doing it for a few years, but I'm in an area where it's such a target-rich environment that I have ample opportunity to practice.
Hmm. A lot of those shots are in the morning on Lex.
Yep.
Right? So explain the, you know, how early you have to get up, get set up, and, you know, like, talk about a lek and what that is for folks.
Yeah, so prairie grouse, like our greater and lesser prairie chicken, greater and Gunnison sage grouse, and sharptail are all lekking species. A lek is basically a large congregation of males where they do displays. Think of it as like the dance floor at the local dive bar. All the males are out there strutting their stuff, waiting to pick up a female to see what's going on. So leks are also historical spots, you know, just like your local dive bar. These are going to be places where generations of birds are going to come to, you know, display for females. A lot of our leks in Grand Forks County are on some of the remaining prairie that we have, and that makes sense. You know, they need grass to display, and this is where they're going to be. So some of our leks that we view in Grand Forks, we use it for public viewing with various high schools and various local organizations. This last year, I think we had, across the state, across three different locations, we had 96 people attend sharptail viewing opportunities. And of those 96, I think 90 of them had never seen a sharptail dance before.
Hmm. How many of those folks were hunters?
A good chunk of them were hunters, especially when we were getting to some of the ones that were out west. We did a partnership with our Knife River chapter out in Beulah, and we brought out two mornings of the biology students there, and a lot of those biology students have grown up hunting grouse and hunting mm-hmm. pheasants out around that area. So to be able to kind of bring this picture, you know, full circle of like, well, we hunt them in the fall, but what happens the rest of the year?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that a lot of people don't know of, and I'm, you know, super lucky to have the opportunities to share that kind of, you know, holistic view of this bird. It's not just something that only exists during the hunting season and you only see it when you're carrying a shotgun and running behind your bird dog, but it's something that is, you know, deeply, deeply ingrained in not only the culture of, you know, the Plains States, but also ancient on this landscape.
Hmm. Ancient on this landscape. Speak about, you know, ancient. Some of the areas that we're, well, the area we're sitting in is part of ancient Lake Agassiz, isn't it?
Yeah, we'd all be drowning, you know, a couple hundred or a couple tens of millions of years ago or whenever it was. It's a cool little spot. The Red River Valley was kind of one of the southern fingers of Lake Agassiz that jutted into, you know, the continental United States. Huge, huge inland sea. I mean, we would have had Mosasaurus, swimming over our heads, you know.
We would have had what?
The big, you know, aquatic reptile. If you've seen Jurassic World, it's like the big one that jumps and, like, eats a bunch of people. I love Jurassic Park and Jurassic World, so I'm kind of a dinosaur. And
what was dinosaur the... Dinosaurs are kind of birds in themselves, right?
Well, birds are 100% dinosaurs. Technically, if we want to be proper in our terminology, we'd say... we wouldn't say that dinosaurs are extinct. We'd say that non-avian dinosaurs are extinct.
Really? I feel like we have to fact check you on that.
You can fact check me on that.
No more class AVs, right?
Well, I'd say put it all in. Well, if we're getting like that, we had talked about it on the walk, but if we're going to not have class AVs, we might as well just call everything fish. You know, that's where it all started, so... You're a fish, the bird's a fish, everything's a fish.
You gotta start having lines somewhere.
Yeah.
Are you a lumper or a splitter?
That's a really good question. It depends.
So explain the question to our listeners if they don't know.
Yeah, so lumping and splitting is kind of a thing that biologists have to play when they're looking at species across the landscape. For example, do we consider American black ducks a different species than mallards, and why do we consider them that?
Or lesser prairie chickens and greater prairie chickens.
Lesser and greater prairie chicken, or, you know, something relevant to where we're hunting right now is sharptail and greater prairie chicken. Do we consider them different species, and if so, why? And you can also run that same thing, like the now extinct heath hen, or like a subspecies of greater prairie chicken that used to be up, you know, around Martha's Vineyard in New England. Mm. Is that a different species, or is that just a subspecies of greater prairie chicken? Some people will say, oh, it's just subspecies. Some people will also say, oh, no, it's full species. For my opinions, when we can have more directed conservation efforts towards a subspecies or, you know, a species by splitting it into two different things, I'd say that's a good thing.
So Colombian sharptails versus...
That was going to be my example.
Oh, it was.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
So splitting Colombian sharptail into Colombian sharptail, and then all the other subspecies that are the more plains, Great Plains, central part of the country, region, calling that plains sharptail, and having two different species, because now we can all of a sudden have more direct conservation efforts towards this species. Subspecies don't really get the credit that they deserve because it's harder to say a subspecies is endangered when the rest of the population in a different section is doing totally fine. Ooh. We have huntable numbers of sharptails in so many states across the Great Plains, But then you get up into those Colombian sharptails, which are phenotypically or look different, appear different, have slightly different displays, are genetically distinct enough, but it's like they're not distinct to a point where we need to consider them as two different species.
Hmm.
I would say call them two different things, you know, because then that's one more bird I can get on my list, too.
So you're a splitter.
I'm a splitter. Unless, you know, but it raises some good questions, like for the biological species concept doesn't work very well at all, where it's like, oh, well, it can only be a species if, you know, it can reproduce with only itself and produce viable young. We're in an area right now where we have an overlap of remnant greater prairie chicken populations and, you know, sharp-tailed grouse. We see more hybrid greater prairie chicken sharptail in this area of Grand Forks County than we have pure greater prairie chickens left. And there's evidence that that hybrid is viable. So it's like, if that hybrid can produce viable young, is it a different species? Like, are sharptail and greater prairie chicken the same species? Depends on who you talk to.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever shot a hybrid?
I have not shot a hybrid with the shotgun, but I've shot them with the camera. About 4 or 5 miles from where we're sitting right now, I've photographed hybrid greater prairie chicken sharptail on a lek.
Mm.
They're goofy birds. Cool. But, you know, it raises some interesting concerns for our, you know, long-term status of greater prairie chickens in general. Sharptail is super, super, super adaptable compared to greater prairie chicken. Actually, on one of our viewing leks, or one of our viewing blinds, you know, not far from where that hybrid was, we had a hen greater prairie chicken come to our lek, and that hen mated with a full sharptail.
Hmm.
So if that was, you know, viable, if those offspring are reared, if that mating was successful, those will be hybrids. And it raises some interesting questions of, you know, so we know why this is happening. We have a hybridization. But is our population of greater prairie chickens so far gone in this region where hens are desperate enough to reproduce that they will go with out of their own species?
Hmm.
We've seen it in person, you know, that there is just not enough greater prairie chicken around here to support the population. So hens, you know, take what they can get. At the end of the day, for an individual, they're still spreading their genetic information. So from a biological standpoint, they are successful whether they're making hybrids or not, because their genetic lineage is continuing. But from a whole species standpoint, we're just going to kind of be watching the watering down of our greater prairie chicken genetics until they're all gone.
She's lumping.
She's a lumper.
So we're going to tease this. We're going to leave this conversation here and pick it back up tomorrow.
Yep.
With Dr. Susan Feligi.
She's the expert.
who is on the Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever National Board of Directors, and who was one of your professors.
Yep, and she was my advisor at school.
Oh, no kidding.
I worked pretty closely with her.
So we'll pick up this lumper splitter, sharptail, prairie chicken, hybrid conversation with the good doctor tomorrow. We're going to change the conversation to talk a little bit about the hunting today so far. So I'm going to have you, Seth, talk us through the plan for this morning. Before I go there, I want to share today's episode premium moment from the field, brought to you by Grain Belt Premium and Premium Light, the pheasant friendly beer available in liquor stores across Minnesota and the 5 surrounding states right now. Good land, good beer. And today's premium moment comes from Facebook. It comes from a person who once hunted with us on Rooster Road Trip, and she is famous for making the best pickled asparagus of all time.
I've been chasing pickled asparagus every road trip since that moment. We have yet to find something that even gets close to hers.
Megan Howell is the her that Andrew's referencing, and Megan shares this premium moment. My girl had cancer and she was dying. She's talking about her pup. This would be her last trip back home to hunt. We had walked these fields for years. She'd always been there for me. This time it was different. I knew she wouldn't be here next year, and it broke my heart. My goal that day was to get her on birds, but I couldn't stop just watching her. Knowing it would be the last time on these very special places crushed me, but it was so special hunting with her. I was paying attention to her and watching her enjoy every second, which meant I missed every bird I tried to get to for her. I've been there, Megan. I totally get it. I wanted to be the one to drop the final bird for her, but I couldn't. I was clumsy, and after every miss, I became more upset and eventually was crying. Toward the end of the walk, my cousin, who I've been walking the fields with since I was five, watched Miss Biscuit, my pup, hit a rooster, and I watched her charge after it. Normally, I'd go running to her because all of her life she tried to eat the birds. This time, I ran up to her, and I just let her have it. She earned it. She spent 11 years hunting for us. This hunt was for her. You can see the joy in her face in this photo I shared on Facebook, and she shares on Facebook. She was in heaven, the same heaven she worked so hard to give me and my family every single hunt. My heart is still broken, but this was a premium moment that I shared with Miss Biscuit, and I wanted to share with all of you. It's just the greatest photo, just the pup just mowing down on the rooster, which, you know, we love our bird dogs for all their flaws and all that makes them great, but it's just wonderful that Megan took the time to share that story with us. Congratulations, Megan. Thanks to your cousin for hitting that bird and sharing that special moment. Thanks also to Grain Belt Premium. And they are sending you, Megan, a Grain Belt Premium prize pack for sharing your story with us. Thank you so much. Hope you're doing well, Megan. All right, Seth, day three. We're finally at present moment. Well, almost. Take us to before sunrise, where you brought us to this morning, where you dropped a pin.
So I brought us to a corner of some, you know, pretty unique kind of blocky plots land that I have hunted, you know, solo or with a buddy of mine or with my fiance that, you know, doesn't get hunted very heavily unless it's me out walking with the dog. And I was like, well, you know what? It's worth a shot. There's some good plots and good public land in this area that's, you know, isn't hunted very heavily, but that there's also a reason why it's not hunted very heavily. It can be tough. There's not a whole lot of pheasants where we started this morning, but historically there have been a good amount of sharp tail. Started at this creek crossing by kind of a big junkyard. Looking out for skunks on our first walk, making sure there's nothing in those old cars that we were going to mess with.
Why do you guys keep bringing up skunks? You know you're going to jinx us.
We're trying to manifest destiny here.
Yeah.
Directed at me.
Yep.
Anyways, go ahead.
Had a first little bit of walk-in, then we walk in this little split row of Russian olives, kind of regathered ourselves and headed out to the next chunk of grass. It's flat out here. If you have never been in the Red River Valley, there's a couple phrases that I have for it. You can watch your dog run away for 3 days. You know, it's about that flat. Another one that I heard, I can't even remember who, but if a frog peed on a rock, it would flood half the county. So that's how flat it is out here.
You are a character, you know that?
So, yeah, there was no frogs peeing this time. We were able to keep our boots dry for the most part. So walking this and, you know, into some of these spots that had sharp tail. We didn't connect with any sharp tail on, you know, the first chunk of the morning. We haven't connected with upland birds all day, honestly. But, you know, it kind of goes to talk a little bit more about, you know, how we're just, you know, taking the shotguns for the walk, letting the dogs run. Dogs are going to be happy regardless. They're going to be tired at the end of the day. And kind of taking in some of this unique habitat that we have out here in the tall grass prairie. So we targeted, you know, spots that had been recently grazed or recently disturbed by haying. And when you're walking, you can feel the difference. Mm-hmm. If you're in the stuff that hasn't been touched by, you know, the hay swath or hasn't been grazed in a while or hasn't been burned or hasn't been managed, it's thick and you're dragging your toes and you're catching on every bit of thatch on your base on, down on your feet. But when we would get into the spots that had been grazed and rested for a while, it was, you know, kind of pleasant to walk through. Mm-hmm. Targeted some of this stuff with taller grass, you know, some of it, you know, midway, some of it, you know, almost up to your shoulders at some points.
And some of it at your ankles.
Some of it at your ankles. It was definitely a big variation in, you know, vegetation structure. And when I hunt sharptail, that's what I target out here. Because, I mean, you can walk a monoculture bit of grass, you know, like you were talking about forever, like talking mm-hmm. about earlier. You can walk that forever and not see a single thing. When it's me or when I'm hunting with a small group or, you know, just me and the dog, we like to hunt those edges, kind of these little islands of microhabitats. These little islands had, you know, some snowberry, lots of rose hips, lots of native forbs like goldenrods and seeds, and there's tons of forage in these little islands. And in my experience, you know, hunting these areas, the older birds might see you and flush. Like, they'll fly away, and it's like, ah, shoot, that's tough to get on. Every once in a while, you can have a young, dumb bird that, instead of flying, just tries to tuck back into that taller grass. And that's, you know, those are the ones you can usually have an opportunity with. I think we didn't run into any dumb birds today.
Well, I think we had some teenagers, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
a little naive.
Close enough for some of us to get some shots at them, but it's still like, wish it's a little bit closer.
We're just out here educating birds.
Exactly.
Well, at the start of the morning, you know, for folks that have never hunted sharptails before, the start of the morning, we had birds in the air that were, I mean, simply moving from where they probably roosted to where they wanted to eat, right? I mean, is that what they were doing?
Yeah. So one of my favorite ways to find sharptail to hunt is to kind of get out there 45 minutes, you know, half hour after sunrise or when birds start to wake up and just see where they go. A lot of times they'll roost in the taller, thicker grass, you know, especially if it gets cold. And it rained last night, so, I mean, they were probably hunkered down pretty tight. And then they're going to go somewhere different to forage a lot of times. So, you know, after we finished our first little walk, which historically had kind of been that roost spot where I've had them early in the morning, you know, we stop and we watch, what was it, three or four birds just go kind of dump right into this little bit of pasture that had been grazed. Grazed short, but very, very diverse, lots of different vegetation structure in there. And we walked that. We did rebump and reflush those birds, but, you know, with how short that grass is, they got away. You know, they're going to live to, you know, hopefully I'll chase them with the camera this spring if we don't get them later on.
Do you struggle with that at all, the juxtaposition
of... Well, I was curious about that, you know, because we can't get close enough to these sharptails. And if you folks haven't seen Seth's work, go check it out. It's on Instagram, Stuff Seth Sees. You're getting really close to these birds, you know, and I have this mental image of you getting out at zero dark 30 in ghillie suit and belly crawling out there with your camera and setting up on these leks. You know, is it that hard, or like, what are some of your tactics for getting some of these great photos?
Yeah, so knowledge of where they're going to be is super, super important. I had mentioned how these leking sites are historic. You know, as long as conditions don't change too much, whether that area like gets plowed or gets flooded or, you know, countless other major disturbances, you can almost bet that there is going to be the lek that was there that last year is going to be there again this spring. The lek that we've been bringing people out to in Grand Forks County, I have watched that lek, you know, when I was doing surveys during school, and that's the one that we still bring people to this day. I can expect birds to set up on the just about exact same area compared to this rock pile every single year. So that's super, super consistent. But I'm setting up blinds when we're doing, you know, large group viewing. I've got pop-up blinds that we set out, and we try to make it as cushy and cozy as possible. But when I'm out photographing birds on my own, I usually go and set my blinds at about, you know, 2 hours after dark, the night before I'm going to go out. So that I don't have to screw with it in the morning in the dark and try and, you know, if I'm running behind. Sharptail especially, you know, don't tend to roost for the night on their lekking sites. They'll go somewhere different, at least in my experience. But, you know, sage grouse, which I photographed, they might roost right on the same spot. So you really, really got to be sneaky. And you got to be careful about, you know, what you're doing. Because if you bust them, they probably will come back, but who knows? Their behavior as a bird is entirely different from when we're hunting them in the fall to when you're seeing them in the spring. I've seen, you know, I've had them lek on the road, like dancing on the road in front of the truck as I'm, like, driving up to them. They are cocky and they are bold and they are dumb. But it's always the males. The females will flush, you know, through the spring just the same way they'll flush in the fall. The males, you know, it's the dive bar. They've been there a while and they're bold. But yeah, so we walked some of these spots that had historic leks, and we bump birds. You know, I like hunting around lekking areas. I don't, well, I guess back to the how I rationalize, you know, the both. It's kind of difficult. That's why I hunt ducks more. Because I kind of, you know, seeing these birds all through the spring, you kind of develop a connection to them. Some of the leks, the males that are on, you know, lek A are going to pretty much stay on lek A, and the males that are on lek B are going to pretty much stay on lek B through the entirety of the spring. And on each little dance ground, there's little territories. So, like, this guy might over here might have this swath, and that guy might have this little tuft of grass and the little opening over there. And we've had some birds that will set up on the same tuft of grass right in front of the blind, you know, 2 weeks in a row. So it's like you really get to know those birds. So I don't hunt too close to the leks that I photograph or the ones that I hang out with. And maybe that's why I hunt more ducks. You know, it's easy to not be connected to a duck. But, yeah, I mean, there's kind of a balance. There's a little bit of a moral, how do I word it? It's a little hiccup, I guess, but it's like North Dakota has huntable populations of sharptail. We have stable populations and we have, you know, the resources to go around. I love hunting sharptail. I hunted sharptail long before I hunted them with the camera. So there's that hunting heritage aspect of it. And my dog loves hunting a sharptail. If I didn't have a dog, it would be a heck of a lot easier to just say, no, I'll just hunt ducks this year.
It also, it feels like you've brought this up a number of times, the hunting around the leks, it's almost always going to be males.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of you're not having as dramatic a potential impact based on what you know of these special lek places.
Yeah. So
or locations.
If we pick up, so that's what we did today. You know, we had birds flying back from their roost to go eat food, and we'd go walk that, you know, in some of the short grass. Tonka, my pup, found a jackrabbit and then went freaking nuts running all clear all over everywhere. So we got to work on that. He's only two, so he gets a little bit of grace for it. So and then we continued. I don't have a steps. I mean, I'm already at, you know, 22,000 steps, yeah, or whatever.
So the second half of those 22,000 steps, you took us to a spot that led right up to now, right?
Yep.
Right as we podcast. Tell us about the spot that had you know, some roosters in it. This is a rooster road trip.
Yep.
What led you to our second spot of the day?
You know, I'm out here all the time in the spring, so, you know, I'm running the camera, but it's also kind of scouting. South of Highway 2 in Grand Forks County, there is not a lot of pheasants. So I would have been super surprised if we bumped a pheasant on those first walks. You know, now where we're at, we're in some areas where there is some pheasants, and I don't know if that's, you know, the difference in the expanse of grass or if that's the difference in, you know, some of the small grains we have around here, or maybe we just farm a lot more corn around here and maybe they just like to hang out up on here. I don't know, but I've had more luck with pheasants on north of Highway 2 than south of Highway 2. And now that north of Highway 2 in Grand Forks County was just opened this year to sharptail hunting, you know, it's a lot more fun to do it when you can, you know, hunt. You don't have to be worried about shooting a sharptail, because I mean, everybody knows that it's like, well, you know, up until this year you can't hunt sharptail up here, but then it's like, oh well, shoot, it's like if one flushes up, pretty much everywhere else in the state you're going to be able to shoot a sharptail. So if someone's up here and a sharptail flushes, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have taken
so them. It had been closed out of fear of shooting a prairie chicken.
Yep it had been closed because of, yeah, to not shoot prairie chickens. In the last couple of years, most of our prairie chickens had actually been south of Highway 2. So we had protected them up here, but a lot of them, then after the reintroduction effort, I can't remember when the reintroduction effort, Susan will talk about it, I'm sure. A lot of them moved south of Highway 2, so any area where you could hunt. But we walked this area, you know, thinking that we'd probably bump sharptail and we'd bump pheasants, because in the plots that we, or the chunks that we walked today, or sorry, not today, just recently, I have shot both limits of pheasants in the past, and this year I had shot limits of sharptail right out of that same spot. So if anybody tells you that you will never flush a sharptail and a rooster in the same habitat, they are lying and they haven't hunted enough. Because they will overlap. So that's, you know, a huge thing in some of the educational, the R3 efforts that I go through, is like that proper ID. If you don't know, don't even pick up your gun. You can ID it when it's going down, you know, 100 yards away. Mm. It's better to do that than to make a mistake and shoot a hen pheasant. Yeah. So
how many roosters do you think we saw this in this spot this morning? Back to your marksmanship comment earlier.
At least three. When we were piling out of the cars, there was one running up the ditch. When Seth and I had one flush wild to my right, that kind of went down the line that Logan and Nate both shot at. And then later on, a very young bird got up wild to my right. And it took me, you know, a split second to figure out, oh, that is a rooster. So pulled the trigger once just to scare him a little bit. Again, we're helping him learn and we're educating these birds. But that's all we've seen so far.
All right, so we'll ask you in a moment where we're going next. So we got hours left in the day. So as we close out, I'm going to ask Andrew to share our membership offer. One more shout out to our Rooster Road Trip partners. Browning Firearms, Federal Ammunition, Orvis Hunting Apparel and Dog Products, Rufflin Kennels, Garmin, Irish Setter Boots, Sound Gear Hearing Protection, and Yeti Coolers. And you can see links to all those partners at roosterroadtrip.org, along with our Rooster Road Trip membership offer.
Yep, so head on over to roosterroadtrip.org and join or renew your membership. Claim your Browning bird and buck knife set. You get two knives if you join or renew. And the best news is you'll also automatically be entered to win a Browning Satori 825, a 12 gauge. It's a beautiful gun, and it's a great way to get in the running because you're supporting conservation, you're supporting our mission. And you get a chance at a free gun that you could perhaps be carrying while you flush a sharptail and a rooster at the same time in the same habitat.
And generally we get in the neighborhood of 300 memberships, give or take, during Rooster Road Trip Week. And so if you think about that, you got a $35 membership and, you know, 1 in 300, 1 in 400 chance on winning a Browning shotgun. That's a heck of a good opportunity, and obviously you're giving back to wildlife habitat conservation. All right, as we wrap up, what do you think we're gonna do next, Seth?
I think we're gonna go walk some chunks that have some small grains around and see if we can't finally get you guys some partridge. Maybe that'll be the goal. Otherwise, we've got a couple small chunks of WPA that have been successful in the past, and you know, public land, if you shoot a bird or not, it's yours to use. So we might as well take advantage of it.
Right on. It's a beautiful afternoon. Will we get a Hungarian partridge? You're just going to have to tune in to episode 4 to find out the answer to that burning question. For Seth Owens, for Aaron Blackschmidt, for Andrew Vavra, I'm Bob St. Pierre, reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. We'll see ya. Episode 4, next.